one last question on this. Is there any merit in experimenting with Proposal B for a couple of seasons to see how it works?
No.
OTB AM live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're on.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
And you are very welcome along. If I were to ask you, who was the only Irish trainer who recorded a winner on Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe weekend at Longchamp over the 2 days, would you know the answer? And would you know if you listened to this?
Next, they've got 2 furlongs to go from here, and Air de Valse and the Winter Power, the two showing in together. Pontos is behind him in third position. Glass Slippers has moved into third now. Most of the leaders in there as well. Sueza comes next as they head down the closing stages, but Air de Valse is clear with Ronan Thomas. A Case of You has moved into second position to give chase, but it's Air de Valse, A Case of You closing with every stride. Air de Valse will be joined by Case of You.
Roughly how many times have you heard that commentary since last week, Ado?
Oh, I've heard it a lot of times. I've watched it. When I'm in bad form now, I just turn that on and watch it.
Ado McGuinness is our guest on the show this week, which is good timing because he recorded an unbelievable Group 1 victory on ARC weekend when A Case of You got up on the line. And these are the fine margins, Ado. 5 lengths back to third, and you literally are talking inches, if not millimetres, to get up on the line here under Ronan Whelan.
Yeah, look, it was a close call, okay, and even when he crossed the line, I didn't know where we were up or not. Eddie Lynham kept telling me, I'd run down off the stand, and Eddie kept saying, you're up, and I still wasn't believing him until I heard that call, you know, until I heard the photo being called. And look, it was a long, I don't know how long it was, probably a minute or so before it was called, but it was a long time now waiting, but it was just an unreal moment then.
Did you look back on your Fitbit to see the old heart rate over that minute or so?
I'd say it would have blown up.
Yeah. Well, it's understandable, really, when you're talking such fine margins. And even if you watch that race back, it's very, very hard to tell who got up.
Yeah, and I suppose in a lot of photo finishes, you always favour the horse that's coming. You know, not the horse that's fading. It's the horse that's getting there. And the same thing happened to me last year. I've been lucky with photo finishes with Saltonstall last year in the Galway Mile. Like he just got up as well, and it took them a lot longer to call that one. So, but it was a close call, but at the end of the day, we passed the finishing post first, and that's the main thing.
Yeah, if the Breeders' Cup is the World Cup of horse racing, maybe the ARC is something like the European Championships or something like that. Ado, can you sum up what was the weekend like? Your trainer going to Paris, which I think everyone would like to be doing at any time of year, but you're going to Paris ARC weekend with a proper chance in a Group 1, and it all comes off. How did your weekend go? When did you go over there? How long did you stay? Where did you stay? Did you enjoy yourself? Did you get to the James Joyce Bar? And did you get home?
I got home Monday morning. I was a bit rattled, okay, but I drove to Tipperary after it to the races. I had a couple of runners in Tipperary. We flew out Friday night because I wanted to see the horses on Saturday morning myself. You know, we're giving them a little bit of a canter. And I've never been in Longchamp before. I've been in Paris on my honeymoon, okay, but I've never been in Longchamp. And as I said, which was a long time ago when I was on my honeymoon, I've never been there. It was just a fabulous place. It's hard to describe it, but it's a really, really, like, it's an unreal daunting place when you arrive into it. And we Saturday we sort of just chilled out. The horses were in great form, they'd all rubbed up, and we you know, I was very hopeful that they were going to run a big race. I went racing that Saturday afternoon, watched all the racing, and then come back in. We done the horses over and fed them, and you know, all they did was eat, sleep and drink, which is the main thing for a horse to do and not fret up, and that's exactly what he did do. And Sunday there was a lot of rainfall, and Ian rang me Sunday morning. He said, God, he said, this might be on. He said, it's raining that hard. The place was floating, and like the ground did take the rain plenty, you know, it took it well, but it was testing, you know, it was heavy. It was not extremes, but it was testing enough conditions. And I went back and I walked the track, then the Abbey track, which is they have where the sprint track is in Longchamp. It's the only race on it for the day, so it wasn't where it was going to get chewed up or that. And they always tell me, like, you sort of nearly run downhill for 4 furlongs, and they always tell me that the inside draw is a great draw to have, and we were drawn five, which was a great advantage to us. And, you know, I said this horse, you know, I knew they were going to go fast, and people say, oh, he, you know, they mightn't lay up, but I knew he'd finish. Like, he's a sprinter that stays, and that's exactly what you want in a top class sprinter, and that's exactly what he is.
What was the conversation with Ronan Whelan beforehand?
Oh, look, what I didn't say, how Pyle Ronnie was beating himself up a little bit over the Flying Five. He said, oh, I said, I should have won it. And I said, look, don't worry. I said, I would have settled for a second. I was a little good at myself after when you're finished second in a Group One, your first ever runner in Ireland in a Group One. And I said, I would have settled for it yet that morning. So I just said, Ronnie, do what you have to do. We knew there was going to be plenty of pace. They would go fast. Like in a sprint, they go fast no matter what. There's no, they don't. You never hear anyone coming in a sprint and say they crawled. So they went. They were always going to go flat out. And usually after two and a half furlongs, it's out with the, you know, the out, and it's pushing and shoving. And we knew this fella would finish. And I just said, Ronnie, take your time. Try and get him in his comfort zone and keep him as close as you can to the front and, you know, to the leaders. And that's exactly what he did do, except the French horse did get first run on the whole field. And she was drawn well, that horse was, but Ronnie didn't panic. And that's what good jockeys do. They don't panic. And he knew he had the horse under him, and out he came out. Like, you know, the way he finished, he was, I think, as I looked at the times and the splits, his last furlong was very fast, you know.
How do they call a photo finish in France? Is it the same over here as when you're just waiting for the number and you're waiting and waiting and waiting? Or how is your French? How did you know he got up?
I was looking at the screen waiting for his pay for that number to come up, number three. And that's what I was doing. And up it came, and, you know, the whole place just went mad. I got a great reception. Ronan got emotional. We all got emotional. It was just brilliant. It's hard to describe the feeling, really. You know, when it happens your first time, but especially in a place like that, as I said, it's like the Champions League final, really, of sprinting. And that's exactly what it was like. And it's very hard to describe it, but it was just brilliant. And we got a great reception of all the Irish people that were there at the races. The, you know, the cheers and the roars we got coming, walking up the gangway, and even walking into the parade ring was unbelievable. And I think my local vet was there, and his two assistants were there, and they come running down to me and chuck, you know, gave us, I got more pats in the back and everything. It was just brilliant.
You probably could have done with the vet on Monday morning, I'd say.
I could have, I tell you that. I needed juice Monday morning. But look, it was, the whole occasion was just brilliant at that time, Johnny. It was, as I said, it was fantastic. And, you know, you just sort of say, am I dreaming? It was, you know, you never think it might happen to you. You'd often be sitting at home watching these races at home and saying, God, wouldn't you love to be there? And, you know, I'm very privileged that I was.
I suppose, you know, much of the talk of sport this week and about football has been about Newcastle United and the takeover, and how effectively it's impossible now for smaller clubs, or very, very difficult for smaller clubs, unless you've massive money to make it at the top level, obviously, in football. The story of this horse, Ado, is it just goes to show, like, that racing dreams really can come true. If you're listening to this on Friday night, we've obviously had the guys on speaking about the Barney Curley documentary, and Belluestown is such an important part of that story. But Belluestown, such a small Irish racetrack, and this is where it all began for a case of you before he joined you, having run for John McConnell.
Yeah, that's correct. And in this game, like, it is powered by, like, it's like a lot of sport, it's powered by money. And the good thing about this game, you can buy a horse like this. I'm not saying that you'll go out every day of the week and find them, but you can go out there and you come across them rather than find them, because you could buy 20 of them horses for that price. You could buy 100 at that price and never find one decent one. And he was a 3 grand yearling, and to buy a horse like that and end up where he is today, a Group One winner, and, you know, he's won group races as well, it's just an unreal story. You know, we gave a lot more than what the 3 grand was, but he wasn't an expensive horse. He's a very, very cheap horse for us at the moment with his value, because he's still a colt and stud value as well. So, you know, it can happen, and you'll always go to the sales all the time. Like, we've been at sales last week and the week before, and you'll always see lads scouting around there, and something cheap might come in, and one of these guys will take a shine to it and they'll buy it, and he could be a superstar. nobody knows in this game until, like, it is all about breeding, but there's always the one freak that will come out, you know, not well bred, and that, and he'll end up like this, and that's exactly what this horse is. He's just a natural, and that's, you know, it's just brilliant. But as I said, dreams can happen in this game.
Well, I spoke to a lad recently who invests in stocks, and he put himself off buying Zoom after Zoom had doubled in value, we'll say, in the lockdown, because he said it's gone up, it's doubled, it's not going to get much higher. And of course it did. Now, this horse was $3,000 before he ran. When you're buying him, so you're buying him at the back end, we'll say, of his 2020 campaign, this is where it gets interesting, because you're going to have to pay a lot more money, but the purchases that your yard has made for reasonably decent money, like, so you're not buying the top, but you're buying horses with proven ability, have gone really well. And how did this transaction take place? And tell us about the owner, Gary Devlin, as well.
Yeah, look, I think there was a problem with it, with an X-ray at one stage. The horse was sold to Hong Kong, and Hong Kong is such a difficult place to get horses in with X-rays. And there was one problem, and we went back, and the horse 2 months later, and we looked at the horse, and we brokered a deal. You know, and we got him x-rayed, fully x-rayed. And sometimes, especially horses that are immature, especially two-year-olds, there could be a little nodule on the knee or that, and it'll never affect them, but the likes of Hong Kong don't accept them. And touch wood, this guy, we got him x-rayed again, and the vet passed him, you know, and it was actually the same vet, and he couldn't believe the change, because the horse was after having a rest for 2 or 3 months, and it's basically immaturity at this time. And you know, he passed him, and we bought him, and we brokered a deal to buy him. And as I said, Hong Kong have come back twice looking to buy him.
And what does Gary say to that?
I won't tell you. It's not going to happen. You know, like a horse, it's a once in a lifetime horse. He's won more money, prize money, than what we paid for him at the moment, and he's worth a lot of money. And why would you want to sell something like that at this moment in time, that you're going to have, you know, you live for it, for a horse like this that's going to hopefully stay in training and stay sound next year, and like, he could take you all over the world.
And in the heartbeat of that victory, like, you now have a stallion prospect. So Gary is thinking, like, I've a horse here who's obviously won a lot of prize money, he's won a Group One, and he must be thinking already now, what happens after his career, and where do we go from here with this horse? Because he's only three, he's a Group One winner, he's a very good sprinter. Sprinters are always in demand as stallions. And I suppose you're only into the next chapter of his story.
Yeah, like, some people will knock him on pedigree and that, and that's why he was quite cheap, because his pedigree wouldn't be as good as other horses. But his sire, the Hot Streak, stands in France at the moment, which would have been great for him, excuse me, for him winning last week. But he has to be marketed. The real good thing you'd love to see is when he does retire to stud, that some good mares go to him, and he can breed some quite smart horses in the first 2 or 3 years of his stallion career. And if that happens, they can really take off then after that. And I can see no reason why he can't, because he's such a laid back horse, and he breed, like, he's so laid back at home, and you'd never think he was a colt. And I think that's a key to some horse, like, you know, breeding horses, because you don't want a mad old horse that's going to be hyper and breeding horses then that are hard and difficult. You know, you need them to be able to reserve as much energy as you can for racing, and I think this horse has it. And he probably did, like, when you take the likes of Kodiak, I think he started off at $5,000. Memas is another horse that started off at $5,000. Dark Angel was another, I think, $6,000 or $7,000 horse. And these horses have all gone up because they produce such very good horses after. They've gone up into $60,000 and $70,000 covering fees now. And that's when they really start to bring in a lot of money. If you know, if a horse can produce the goods and get his progeny to be very smart horses, then they can become very, very good stallions. But you know, and there's a lot of marketing on studs to try and market a horse and sell a horse when he does go to stud. So don't ask me where he's going to go for that, but I'm sure he'd probably stay in Ireland.
If we could just get that photo up that we had there just momentarily, this is the beauty of horse racing and the beauty of these animals, where you're basically beside the horse. He practically has a big smile on his face. They've so much character. I mean, he basically looks like a fellow who's just about to have a night out there and is basically free for the weekend. He couldn't have a care in the world. He's beside you, Ado. What's he like as a character at home? Because I guess just the character of these horses is so compelling as well.
Yeah, he's a very intelligent horse, and even when you see him, when he crosses the finish line, the two ears come up and he pricks his ears, and that's exactly what he's very intelligent. There's not a bad bone in his body, really. He's a great character. He's great in the stable. You can take him out and bring him for his pick of grass and his roll and that, and he loves it. And you know, he just has that good character. He's not overly hyped up. He doesn't get overly hyped up on that. And he got a little bit to the rib just before he went out, but it was all very controllable. And to me, it's very important.
Every time I have a beer in the Carroll House now and Ricky is there, it seems like I'm part of Team Ado McGuinness. And I think this is something that struck me as well. He was texting me then on the Sunday night. He said, come on, we're all going to Tipperary. And even though, like, he's obviously one of your owners or whatever, it's kind of, isn't it a bit like if a club has one of their players gets onto the county team and everyone follows them? It's part of that, and that you're part of that story, and you want your Ado McGuinness to do well, and you want your fellow owners to do well because you're part of the story as well, I suppose.
Yeah, the guys, actually, there was a couple of Ricky's guys out last week that were out for current options, and you know, they were all in the parade ring when the other horse come in as well, when AKCU come in. And these guys, they're a great bunch of guys. They're involved in a lot of horses, and you know, they're just great guys to have gone racing. And that's what race goers are all about, are these type of guys that come racing, enjoy their day racing, have a beer and have a bite to eat, and you know, love a little punt. They're not heavy punters or anything, but that's what, you know, in my opinion, that's what racing is all about, is guys like these.
Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. And obviously last week we were talking to a trainer about another 3-year-old stallion prospect in St. Mark's Basilica. That was Aidan O'Brien. And I guess I did make the point that one of the problems the flat has is that you get these 3-year-old stars are then whisked off to create other horses rather than race themselves. How long will this fella stay in training, Aidan?
Look, he'd probably stay in training next year, and then I suppose it'll depend. If we can bag another Group 1 or 2 Group 1s next year, he's going to be a very, very valuable stallion prospect. And at that stage, you could turn around and say, listen, you know, he has to go to the breeding shed, and you can understand why then he will. But I'm sure they'll race him on next year, and then we'll sit down and hopefully he'll be a double or a treble Group 1 winner when I'm talking to you this time next year.
Happy days. And people will be listening in and watching at home, and they'll be saying Ado McGuinness, now he'll have people knocking down his door to get horses. But it actually doesn't really work like that necessarily, does it?
No, look, we've had to work hard to gather in all these owners and get owners in, and it's not easy. And like, it's all about capital as well. And you know, we've been at the sales last week, Johnny. We bought yearlings last week, and we bought some the week before, and we bring them back, and you know, we try and syndicate some of them. Sometimes we have orders for some of them as well, but we're launching a new investments yearling scheme next week. We're going to launch that, and we have some yearlings there for that, and we're going to buy some more next week and the week after. So it's all about trying to get new stock in and new people in, and you know, to get in and invest in the game and enjoy the game.
And it's ridiculous to me that Stephen Kenny is mentioned so much, and there's very little said about the likes of Anthony Barry, who's such a massive cog in the operation. And it'll be all about Ado McGuinness, but there are so many cogs to your wheel as well in the stables up in North Dublin.
Yeah, look, it goes back down to even the guys that muck out the stables, of two brilliant guys that do that. And you know, they're, to me, they're a very important part of the yard. They keep the yard spotless. They muck out the horses every day. They clean the water buckets. They wash that. That's a very important part of the yard to the guys that ride out every day. You know, they look after the horses, to the likes of Stephen, who he's my assistant. He's there when I'm not there, or he went to York this morning with a horse, and my wife does the accounts and does, you know, bits and pieces around the, like, if whatever we need doing, she's does all that. And then I have three kids there, and they help out as well. So it's a big family affair, but I still have a huge amount of staff. Like, you know, we've good staff on top of that, and once they're all happy, and they are all very happy, but they work very hard, and thankfully they're all getting rewarded at the moment.
And anyone who visits your yard will be struck by, I suppose, the atmosphere there. It's such a friendly atmosphere. But a couple of other key points, I suppose, is that it's adjoined to effectively a strawberry farm, and also it's very, very close to the sea, which are two big parts of your life as well.
Yeah, look, I grew strawberries for years and tomatoes long before I ever went training horses, and the only place I ever worked is on that farm since the day I was born. Like, I've only ever worked there. I've never worked anywhere else in my life, not even with horses. I've just picked it up as I've gone along, and it's an unusual place for people. Some people go into big, you know, real fancy yards. Mine wouldn't be fancy, but it's a very practical yard that is run, and you know, I think the main thing is horses are kept healthy, they're fed well, and that's a huge part of it, and that's exactly what we do. And we've a good setup, and the system that we work is working, and it's working very well for us at the moment.
How did the feeling of that victory compare to the ones you've had from, say, Victram in the Imperial Cup back in the day to winning the big race at Galway? Was this different gravy altogether?
Yeah, it was different. I'll never forget the likes of winning the first Galway Mile. I'll never ever forget that. But to win a Group One, I suppose it's a bit like winning the Champions League. You can win all the league championships, but when you go and win the Champions League, then it's, you know, it's different gravy altogether. And this definitely is. You've world-class trainers all around you, and world-class jockeys. And, you know, jockeys come over to me the other day that I didn't know, shook my hand and said, well done, and, you know, after racing and that. And, you know, it was just unreal. And we walked out of Longchamp the other day, and I had the trophy in my hand, and we were heading for the bus, and two English guys said to me, you know, what did you win? I said, we won the Abbey. And he said, you won the Abbey and you're on a bus, you know? And, you know, and I said, yeah, we're on the bus. But we had a great day, we had a great time even traveling back into Paris on the bus. The guys, we had a great sing song with the English guys, and it was one of these big long buses, and they were dancing at the back of it, and it was bouncing all over the place. But, you know, that's the way we are, and and that's the way we stay. And, you know, it's the same in the yard. You know, it's a simple yard that works.
Yeah, I actually remember being on the Ryanair flight back to Dublin the day after See the Stars won the Ark, and there was Michael Canaan more or less sitting behind us in the economy seats, just like the rest of us. The show goes on, because, as you say, where were you racing Tipperary then on Monday with the lads?
Yeah, it was a Tipperary Monday afternoon. Now, I had a good night in Paris Sunday night. Okay.
I fought us to prove it, actually.
Sorry?
I had photos to prove it. We won't bring them up here.
It was a good dance, or a good crack in the Irish pub, and we had a great time. And, you know, I get up Monday morning, business as usual, and off we go. A little bit drowsy, but we managed and kicked on then, and, you know, back to normal then Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday. I'm back up in my tractor in the morning, out harrowing the gallops and doing the horses, and that's exactly what I love doing.
And say if there's a bunch of lads, and increasingly, like, the lads and ladies that get involved in horse ownership now, they are inclined maybe to go towards the flat, because maybe Dundalk and so on, and it's maybe a little bit easier than taking on the big guns, one would argue. But if somebody were to set up Cynic and go to Adam McGuinness, what does he or she get?
Yeah, look, it depends what you want. And I've had a good few inquiries about horses this week. You've got, to me, recommend if a bunch of people want to go in and buy, you know, go racing straight away, Johnny, I recommend them to buy a horse in training and, you know, get the feel of horse racing rather than going buying a yearling. I think people got to understand what yearlings are and how long it takes to produce a yearling, you know, before racing. Because you can buy a yearling today and it could be next August or September before this horse is able to run, if he's a bit backward or he could have a mishap. And whereas I can go to the horse and train and say, in 2 weeks' time, I'll buy a horse and I'll have them racing in November, December. But you're never going to get rich out of them horse and training horse, but you'll have good fun and go racing quite quickly. Buying the yearling, you could buy the 3 grand yearling and end up with a KCU. And that's the dream of buying a yearling, but you could buy a yearling and you could end up maybe not seeing the race course if he's not fast enough. So I always throw the options to the guys first, what they want to do. If a bunch of guys comes to me and said, look, we want to get racing, I want to get there quick, well, it always has to be a horse and training horse. And you know, sometimes what happens is you get the guys like this in and they get going, and then all of a sudden they see the 2-year-olds and that, and say, God, maybe we'll buy a yearling next year. And they have a, you know, a bunch of guys maybe have two, they have one racing and one, the young horse coming on, and they can live the dream with the young horse if he ends up progressing. You just don't know what he could end up doing. And that's what I would recommend if a bunch of guys came to me, you know, green. I think if you go and buy a yearling and he's not good enough, and you have a bunch of first timers into him, and in 10 months time they've paid training fees, and all of a sudden, oh, this horse not good enough, a lot of them lads will just get turned off straight away. So to me, you have to get them in and get the feel and get the atmosphere going, for especially for people that are starting off. So the horses in training is that type of horse for them.
How did you ride out the recession, actually?
Sorry?
How did you ride out the recession?
In 2007, I tell you, I struggled. I think I was left with 7 or 8 horses down the yard. My wife was working, and only for she was working at that time, I'd say I would have been out. I would have had to go and do something else, because I was lucky probably that I hadn't got a rented barn or anything like that. I was in my own place, and I was very lucky to be able to stay going. I called myself a survival trainer at that time, because that's about all you were trying to do, is just survive. And it was hard. And as I said, only there was another income coming into the house at that time, I'd say I would have been in trouble. And then just gradually we got it built back up again and started. I had Bubbly Bellini through that, and I owned it a half share with him, and he won 110 grand for us 1 year, and that was a huge amount of money back to keep me surviving that year, you know. And I built a new gallop out of that, so I always put it all back in to try and keep improving and cost me less, and that was a huge thing. But it was tough starting off, you know, starting trying to get back up again, and a lot of lads didn't survive. Some guys just sort of survived and just try to keep surviving. But as I said, I call myself the survival trainer, and a lot more people like me. But I suppose I've been lucky then that we came across some good horses and we came across some good owners, and it was a huge factor then to keep going again. I had a great supporters in the likes of the Total Recall Racing Club there with me since I started training horses, and they've always been very lucky that they've always come across a good horse or two, and they keep you going. And we always done well in the likes of Galway with their horses and that, and the likes of a winner at the Galway Festival during the summer always gave you a great kick, and you know, give you that more, put more bite into you to stay going and trying to do, you know, better again.
Yeah, no doubt you look back, and in your time to come, you look back on Bubbly Bellini almost with similar fondness to a case of you, because, you know, a horse like that keeps the show on the road in difficult times.
Yeah, the likes of him, Bo Satchel, them horses, yeah, they were always, you know, they'd always get you that good winner somewhere where you needed it, and, you know, they were very important types of horses to have, and I'm privileged now to have maybe 9 or 10 of them horses in the yard all the time, which is great. You know, that's the difference between now and then. And you could never afford these type of horses at that time. Like, I remember going to Tattersall's and Newmarket with 10, 15 grand to buy a horse. Like, and that's hard to do, and try and pick out a horse to buy, you know, to buy. And we were lucky with 1 or 2 yearlings as well that we bought and we sold, and, you know, they just kept you afloat, and that was important at that time.
And we'll get a line off you just on your 3 runners over Saturday and Sunday as well, but it would be remiss of me not to mention the year you've had on a personal level. When I was in the yard the last time, I think you got a bit emotional because firstly you were talking about your dad who'd passed away obviously a few years ago, and his kind of love for the game that maybe he inculcated in you to an extent, but also your brother was quite sick at the time, and I guess you knew what was going to come down the tracks, but it was a very difficult year for you on other levels.
Yeah, look, last Christmas, before Christmas, my brother was very ill, and it was a horrible time. And, you know, I'd seen it all before, and it was happening again in front of my eyes, and it was my youngest baby brother, which was very, very hard to do. And I remember the week after Christmas, he passed away the 12th of January. I stayed in the house with him there for 10 days, and I remember watching and racing with him there a couple of nights, and I watched him be the winner in the dock that night, and you know, he'd always say, here, put a few quid in this for me, and he was always a guy that would want you to stay going and keep going. And, you know, if I had a good winner during the day, he'd often ring me. And it was very, very hard. And it was through COVID as well. So he was quite a popular guy all around the area. And it was just, you know, he couldn't see his friends too, you know, that many friends at that time. And it was just a very, very hard time. And he had a great phrase that he used to say, keep her lit. And that's exactly what he'd say to you when you'd be going out the door. And we've always, that's exactly what we've done. And he's actually a year dead now next January, and we're running a big tractor rally and truck rally with lights after Christmas. And we hope to raise maybe 50,000 or 60,000 with it. But I know, I'd say it's taken a lot of organisation. His wife is there, and the whole family is involved in it. And with Country Crest Potatoes over in Lusk, and we're going to raise a lot of money for charity for this. So we've always, and he'll always say, keep her lit, and that's exactly what I'm doing for him as well.
What's the charity you'll be raising for?
I think there's some cancer charities, and there's a couple of, I think there's a youth program in Fingal that they're going to donate money as well. So they're going to split three different charities. We haven't exactly named the charities yet, but they're talking about splitting three different charities for it. And it'll be, I think all the tractors are dressed up in lights and that, and I think it's probably the possession, but I think it's going to take about 2.5 hours of a drive between Lusk, Rush, Skerries, Balbriggan and back to Balruthery. And it happened a few years ago for another kid over in Lusk there, for a kid who was quite ill at the time, and they raised a lot of money for him. So was just through somebody had said to do it. So it'll be, I think it'll be a great occasion. I think it's the Sunday after Christmas, or the Sunday after New Year it is.
And I suppose like grief can be complex and maybe prolonged, and it can hit you in a strange way, maybe an unexpected way, but racing must have been so beneficial for you to just keep her lit and to keep going when you've something to do to, I suppose, take your mind off the tragedy of losing your youngest brother.
Yeah, it was. And this guy, you know, he loved going to Listowel. He had his stag party in Listowel a few years ago, and we had a great time in it. And he never missed Galway Festival. He always went to Galway for the weekend. And, you know, he loved racing. And you know, when you go racing and this happens, and two or three people texted me the other day and said, you know, Casey, you got a huge push from the sky the other day. And that's, you know, that's, it was great. And I know he was there with us the other day, you know.
And if he were still around and he asked you to back one of these three horses you have over the weekend, Laugh a Minute for the Lads, Spanish Tenor, a Rosie Rock, what would his tenor be going on?
I think Laugh a Minute will run a big race. He was very unlucky last week, the week before last, up the Curra. As long as the ground doesn't get heavy, I think he'll run a big race in York tomorrow. Spanish Tenor will run well. Rosie Rock, she's solid. But if I had my money, I'd put it on Laugh a Minute on tomorrow in York, and maybe Spanish Tenor each way. And we've dreamed today, tonight in Dundalk, and I think he'll run solid.
Edo, it's been brilliant having you on. I think everyone in Irish racing gets a great kick out of one of the so-called smaller yards having a winner a weekend like that. And lovely to hear you talk about your brother in such a way. And we'll have you on again soon, please God.
Cheers, Johnny, and thank you very much.
Yeah, that was Edo McGuinness. Only 7-toe 10-to-follow stables out of over 12,000 featured in Sunday's Prix de l'Arc Triomphe winner Tocador Tasso, and need to say we were not among them. Trinawa did finish second, give me a few extra points, with some Group 1 races still to come at Ascot next weekend. There I am in an increasingly comfortable second, but a somewhat actually in fairness I've closed the gap to Tom Malone to a very healthy figure. Tom Malone 414.16, Johnny Ward 354.15, Ger Gilroy 309.28, languishing in last place. Anyway, with some Group 1 races still to come at Ascot next weekend, including two bonus point races, the QE2 and Champion Stakes, it is still possible for me, inverted commas, Ger, to overhaul Johnny. This script isn't even meant for me, so this is meant for Ger. Well, it's still possible for Ger to overcome me, but it's obviously very unlikely. It's also time to start thinking about the upcoming National Hunt season, with the Jumps 10 to follow due to open for entries at the end of this month. Keep an eye on tote.ie, and if you have followed the 10 to follow with us in the flat, I guess it'll show the ups and downs of it, because I was completely tailed off with Ger, but we have somewhat narrowed the gap to the likely winner Tom towards the end. And the jump season coming upon us, spoke to Gordon Elliott during the week. Unbelievable number of good horses coming up in his yard, and Willie Mullins's, and lots of crack to be had. Friday Night Racing Off the Ball is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. We'll be back next Friday at 3 p.m.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.